Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact, I'm the best. You know what I mean? I sometimes don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 68 of the Last Round Podcast. Once again, thank you guys for tuning in this week. I'm Danny Z with my co-host right across from me, Michael, the Franchise Shepherd. 68 weeks we've been in this studio, Mike.
Who would have thought it?
But like we said in the previous weeks, we've done more shows than 68 episodes because we do a lot when we're at events, when we're at fights, press conferences, you know. Technically, we do more than like one when we're at events because we interview a bunch of people and they're like 20, 30 minute interviews and stuff like that. Or
yeah, we got what, far at the Tyson Fury?
We might be over 100 if you think about it.
Something all like for that. Free.
All for free. That's right. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening in this week, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever you're listening on, we appreciate it. We're just coming off of fights this past Saturday, which was Kell Brook was probably the most prominent one of the weekend.
Kell Brook or Gary Russell?
Or Gary Russell. I think Kell Brook probably got a little bit more attention, but, you know, they're both. I mean, Gary Russell did have the world title on the line, but.
And he's
he does fight once a year, though.
There you go.
So I wish he fought more because obviously he's very talented. But we do have a special guest on the line this week. He's one of the most recognizable names and faces in the fight game, not just in boxing, but in MMA, Bellator. He was with UFC at one point. He's all over the place. He was just in Miami, I think, at the DAZN card this past Super Bowl weekend for the Matchroom card. And he's been nice enough to jump on this week to speak about his new relationship that he has with Tyson Fury, who faces Deontay Wilder on February 22nd. Stitch Duran joins us this week. Thanks a lot for joining us, Stitch.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys. It's always nice to talk stuff that we do, right? So let's get it on.
Awesome. Thank you very much. So just like I just mentioned, you just linked up with Tyson Fury, who fights, as I mentioned, Deontay Wilder in his rematch on February 22nd in Las Vegas. Which is actually good for you because you live in Las Vegas, so it's right in your backyard. You don't have to travel that far. So, you know, what a lot of people want to know, of course, is that how did this relationship come about? Who reached out to you? Was it Tyson? Was it Sugar Hill? Was it Tyson's dad? How did this come about?
Yeah, it was crazy because, I guess about a month before I met Tyson, Kevin Barry, a great coach here in Las Vegas, had called me and, you know, they were talking to Bob Arum about Joseph Parker, by signing Joseph Parker up at Top Rank and some of the other fighters that he had. And Bob Arum had asked Kevin Barry what he thought about me, you know. And I'd worked with Kevin before, of course. And he, you know, gave him some nice words. And they did some more, you know, asking other guys questions about me. And, you know, I guess, you know, through all the positive things that were said about me, I got a call that, you know, Tyson Fury wanted to meet me. So it was 2 weeks ago. I walked into the gym and he puts his hand out and says, "Welcome to the team, Stitch," you know? And
yeah.
So that was that's kind of the way it happened. Bob Arum was there. And I guess, you know, Bob Arum definitely, you know, highly suggested that I'd come on board. And I think, you know, Tyson Fury, I guess, you know, he definitely acknowledged that. And it was nice because, you know, shortly after that, he puts out a Twitter that, you know, welcome, you know, the best cut man in boxing, Stitch Duran, to the Tyson team and all that. So we became family and just left the gym a while ago and glad to be part of that team.
So how's he been looking since, I mean, you just say you just left the gym. How's he been looking since you've been there in terms of his skills and his training?
No, he's looking super, you know, real dedicated. And you know, one of the first things I told him is that, you know, when he fought Vladimir Klitschko, of course, I used to work with Vladimir Klitschko. When he beat Vladimir, I thought Vladimir just had a bad day. Mm-hmm. And then I saw him fight Deontay Wilder, and I just realized that Vladimir didn't have a bad day. Tyson Fury made him have a bad day. but to me, I became a big fan of his just because of his boxing ability. And he's such an astute student of what he does. But in the gym, he's looking tremendous. You know, he has, I think, about four or five sparring partners. And Sugar Hill, that I've worked with before. Andy Lee, of course, I worked with Andy before. You know, they're all part of the team. And of course, you know, I worked with Emmanuel Stewart for many years, so I'm very familiar with that system of training. And Tyson Fury is absorbing everything that Sugar Hill is showing him. So it's been a fun camp, and I look forward to working with him.
Stitch, is there anything, you know, in camp they have to do different in sparring? Are they told to, you know, avoid that area that's obviously got all those stitches in?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because the first thing, you know, when I first met him the first day, you know, he showed me the cuts that he had, and whoever, you know, the surgeon that did the big cut did an excellent job, you know. And but, you know, we definitely talked about that. Obviously, that's why I'm on board. But I told him, I said, you know, my whole goal, my only goal is for you to walk out of that ring as handsome as you walk in, you know. And I said, then, you know, as I tell all these fighters, when you're in the fight, during those moments, you are, I'm going to treat you like you're my son. And, you know, those are just words of compassion that kind of let him know that I'll be taking care of him, you know. But very simple, you know, I told him every round I'll keep ice on, you know, where the cuts were, just to make sure that, you know, there's not any swelling, and just to kind of keep the blood vessels a little bit more compressed, and, you know, just eliminate any possibilities of any damage being created. So, you know, we picked up a real good bond, the whole team. From England and Ireland, they're all super, super people to work with.
What did you think of the cut that he got, I believe, when he fought Otto Whalen a couple months back in Las Vegas? It was actually, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've seen your share of cuts, but, you know, it was a pretty deep cut right above his eyebrow. Actually, I think it was two cuts or something like that. What did you think about it? What did you think about it?
Yeah, of course, you know, it would have been easily stopped, and it would have warranted to be stopped just because of the damage that was created, or the possible damage, long-term damage that it could have created with optical nerve damage, or, you know, just nerve damage and all that. But credit to Jorge Capetillo, he really is the one that just kind of kept it under control. And of course, there was some bleeding. It looked real, real bad, but Jorge, you know, kept the blood away from his eyes. And whenever they stop a fight, it's because a fighter is at a disadvantage. And, you know, the great thing about working in Las Vegas is these doctors are, a lot of them are trauma doctors, and, you know, they're used to multiple cuts. They're used to big cuts, and they don't freak out. And they let Jorge, they give him every opportunity to control the bleeding, you know? So, in that aspect, yeah, he definitely dodged the bullet, and for sure. And, you know, I'm just glad that, you know, they have enough respect in me to bring me in. And you know, let me add here, because I haven't mentioned it, but I will give Jorge Capetillo a lot of credit because, you know, as the game, he's a great coach, but as in the game of being a cut man, and he himself will tell you that he was a novice. And when all that happened, his instincts just kicked in. But he's one of the guys that told Tyson Fury, you know what, I'm not really at this level yet. I would suggest that you bring in Stitch Duran. Oh. You know, so in his part, he didn't have to do that, you know, because he could have worked the cut or worked the fight and, you know, got a lot more credit and all that. But he realized that, you know, such a big opportunity for Tyson Fury, and no sense taking any chances.
So Jorge did, you know, give his advice to Tyson, saying that they should hire you on the team because, I mean, obviously a lot of fans, you know, they don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Only a select few know what's going on, like yourself and the fighters and stuff. Because there were some people who said, oh, you know, why would you let go of a guy who saved that fight for you, you know, in Jorge Capetillo? But you're saying that Jorge Capetillo was one of the ones who told Tyson, like, hey, you know, like, you should hire Stitch. Like, he's obviously the best in the game. You know, I'm not really at this level, but I want to help in any way I can. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, of course, you know, and Jorge's a good friend of mine, number one, you know, and, you know, I got to give him a lot of credit, but he called me and he told me, you know, here's what I told Tyson, you know, and so, you know, he knows, and, you know, he's in the gym, he's still working with the team and everything, but at a different capacity. And, you know, but he understood that, it's such an important fight for him. And they really, Tyson and Jorge have become very, very good friends. And, you know, he didn't want to, you know, put him in harm's way if he didn't have to. And, yeah, he called me, and, you know, he's one of the guys that suggested that I come on board. So, you know, I got to give Jorge a whole lot of credit for manning up. You know, he didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, he could have gone and, you know, and continued working the cut or the next fight. But, you know, he just didn't want to take no chances. And you know, you dodge one bullet, you know, can you dodge two? And so I got to give him a lot of credit for him. But, yeah, he's in the gym every day with us.
Stitch, I saw a previous interview where you talked about the psychological aspects of being a cutman. Do you think that's one of the reasons why Tyson brought you in? Because obviously it's a huge fight. So having the best in the business, you know, kind of gives him that edge that if he does get cut, there's no one better in the corner to help him.
Yeah, of course. You know, and that's why, you know, when we stood there and we talked about the cuts and, you know, psychology is one of the things that I'm good at also. You know, it's outside of just wrapping hands and working cuts. Is, you know, you have to understand the heart and soul of the fighter. And these guys are all modern day gladiators, but deep inside, they're all babies. You know, and I understand that, you know, and like when Vladimir fought Anthony Joshua, you know, I told him at the weigh-ins, I put my hand on his shoulder and I said, look, don't worry about nothing tomorrow. I'm going to take care of you like you're my son. So right before Michael Buffer does the announcement in the middle of the ring in front of 90,000 people, I'm putting the final Vaseline on him and we're about 8 inches away from each other. And he tells me between him and I is, as you could call me son. But in doing that, I knew that I had got into him that night before because, you know, the night before a fight, these guys, they're on pins and needles because they're going into battle the next day. So I took that element away from him. And the same thing when I met with Tyson Fury, I told him the same thing. I said, look, don't worry about nothing. Like I say, my job is to make sure you walk out as handsome as you walk in. And in the ring, you are my son. I'm going to treat you like you're my son. You know, and these words, I think, are words of encouragement. That way he could throw that aside and don't have to worry about the cut.
You'll be in camp with Tyson all this week. So is there anything in particular that you'll be looking for, like psychologically, that you can help, you know, motivate him come fight night?
Well, you know, I my job is not to give instructions. I mean, I work with Sugar Hill and, you know, many times before with Jonathan Banks and Andy Lee and all that. And Sugar Hill is doing a great job in keeping him. So, yeah, if I do say something, I'll tell him, you know, before the fight, you know, my job is not to give instructions, but if I do say something, there's a lot of truth to what I say because I definitely know the game. And, you know, Vladimir Klitschko picked up on that, you know, a time or two when I threw in some quick words of encouragement or some quick words of you know, technique or something like that. He knew that I was in bullshit, you know? So, I think Tyson Fury, you know, we're creating that kind of, a relationship. So, you know, but yeah, you know, I'm not one to be cheering and, you know, this and that. I just, you know, go do my work. But when it's time to do my work, I give them 150%.
So Stitch, going back to the cut that Tyson Fury suffered a couple months back or a couple fights ago, in Vegas, as I mentioned earlier, you were in Miami for Super Bowl weekend for the DAZN Matchroom card. And then also on that card, Joseph Diaz Jr., who just won his first title at 130 pounds, also got a pretty bad cut during his fight. I know you weren't involved in his corner or anything, but I'm sure you were watching it, I'm sure you've seen it at least subsequent to that. What in comparison to like Tyson Fury's cut, because they were both, I think, above the eye or, you know, in combination, how do you compare two cuts like that?
Yeah, well, you know, JoJo, in fact, the cut man Ben did a great job on JoJo Diaz and keeping him in the game. But, you know, what I would have did is it was an unintentional headbutt. And, you know, if it's unintentional, it goes beyond four rounds and it goes to the scorecard, right?
Right.
So what I would have done is after the fourth round, of course, JoJo was ahead on the scorecards. I would have had the doctor come in and I would have told him, you know, it looks bad. Stop the fight, let it go into the scorecards and then he would have won. But instead, you know, they let it go the whole 12 rounds and, you know, why put a fighter in jeopardy, especially with a cut as bad as that. But that's knowing the whole understanding of the game of boxing. And I did that with my first fight with Vladimir Klitschko when he lost his world title in the first fight coming back. I worked with him, Emmanuel Stewart, when he fought Devero Williamson, and same thing happened. He got an unintentional headbutt, but he was winning the fight. And in the fifth round, I told him and Vitaly that, you know, you got a bad cut. You're winning the fight. I'm going to have the doctor stop the fight. So when the doctor came in, she asked, well, what do you think? And I've done those cuts before many a times in the UFC, and the doctors in Nevada know me. And but that was, percentage-wise, was the best time for him to have won that fight. So what I did is I opened up the cut in front of the doctor, and she understood that, you know, stop the fight. It went to the scorecards, and he ended up winning and became a world champion for about 10 years. And a little side note to that, months later, I'm doing another show in Las Vegas, and Jay Nady, which is the referee, comes up to me, and he says, Stitch, did you do what I thought you did? You open up that cut in front of the doctor? And I said, I did. He goes, that was ingenious. You know, but that's knowing the rules outside of wrapping hands and working cuts and, you know, the psychological, you have to understand all aspects of the game. And even though my whole focus during the fight is on the face, though I still score them as I go, you know, and I look at all the avenues. But the same thing with Tyson Fury, you know, or Jojo Diaz, you know, I would have stopped it sooner. But nonetheless, going to the 12 rounds, the cut man did a tremendous job.
So Stitch, is that, I mean, I'm sure for you, as somebody at, you know, such a high level that you've been, especially with so many years under your belt, is that common for you? Because I'm sure a lot of fans that, you know, they see doctors obviously going up to the ring in the corner and checking the fighters, and they think, okay, well, the doctor, you know, being medically trained and all that stuff, like, you know, that's why they're there. They have all the power. But because you have so much experience, obviously, like you just mentioned, and especially in the state of Nevada and Las Vegas and stuff like that, you're saying a lot of the doctors, a lot of the physicians, when they go up and do their examinations, especially if it's a cut and stuff like that, they ask for your opinion from your perspective?
Yeah, they do. I've had doctors say, you know, what do you think, Stitch? You know,
wow.
So I kind of direct them, you know. But yeah, of course, you know, that makes a big difference. And that's a very good point, because, you know, you hear top of the line referees, you hear top of the line doctors that will tell you that they'll see who's working the cut. And of course, you know, they'll give them some flexibility. And I think a fight I did in Carson, California, I can't remember who, but the guy had a big old cut, and the referee called timeout, and he took the fighter to the doctor. And 3 seconds later, the doctor's coming back down the stairs, and the fight continues. And after the fight, he says, yeah, it was you working the cuts. You know, I was a concern. So they know that I'm there to take care of the fighters, and they know that, you know, if anybody's going to have a capability of at least controlling the fight or the cuts, then, you know, I've done it many times before, and they acknowledge that. So that's a good question.
What's the worst cut that you've had to work in your career up until this point, Stitch?
Oh, man, I count tons of them. You know, the Tyson Fury type of cuts, you know, the Jojo Diaz type of cuts. You know, because now I'm doing bare knuckle fights, but even working with the UFC and just MMA, and I've done a lot of big cuts like that. And you know, it's just a matter of people saying, "Well, what's it take to be a good cut man?" Is keeping your composure and understanding the mentality of a fighter, and you know what to use, when to use it, and how to use it, and you know, just the whole ball of wax that falls into one system, and the system that I have gives me the highest percentage of controlling the cut, and it seems to be working. You know, now I see a lot of cut men that are doing the same thing. They're wearing gloves. They got the wrist wrap where they put the swabs there instead of putting them in your mouth and your ear. And you know, they're using clean towels every round, and you know, they're using the same techniques. They're squeezing the cut and, you know, compressing the blood vessels, and you know, just little things like that. That, you know, I know people see me and they know that it works, so they mimic what I do. Because, you know, as I was learning years ago to be a cut man, I've been in Vegas 26 years, so this may be 30 years ago. I was working a show I was a spectator at the Bay Area in Oakland when Marvis Frazier was fighting Bone Crusher Smith. And one of the earlier fights, a guy did a good job on the cuts, and I went and asked him what he did. You know, I told him, I said, you know, I'm trying to learn to be a cut man. You know, can you tell me what you did? And he says, F you. He says, I'm taking this to my grave, and you got to learn like me, and walked away. I thought about the same. I thought like about 2 inches tall, but that just kind of reinforced that I never wanted to be like this guy.
Right. You know,
that was the old mentality of boxing in the old days, that they thought it was a secret. But once you break down the science of it, it's all in technique and how you do it and what you apply and how you apply. So, you know, that statement there just kind of reinforced what I do. So I teach guys. I was at the gym with Jesse Vargas today, and he's one of the sparring partners from California. And his coach is asking me, you know, all these questions, and I'm sitting there answering them and telling them which is the best way to take care of the fighter. So, you know, I always say the coach will show a fighter how to fight, but nobody shows the coach how to take care of the fighter. And I think if I ever leave a legacy, it's the legacy that I made the game safer for a lot of the fighters.
Stitch, looking forward to fight night next week. Can you just give us a rundown of, as a cut man, what will happen on the day? When you're cornering a big fight like that, will you work with any more fighters on the night?
Yeah, it's pretty systematic for me. You know, the system that I have works. But what I'll do is actually the night before, I'll break down all my equipment. And even though Sugar Hill is wrapping Tyson Fury's hands, I always bring enough gauze and tape for five fighters. That's just, you know, my tradition, you know. And with the swabs that I make, if it's a 12-round fight, you know, I'll normally make 24, 30 swabs. I always prepare for the worst-case scenario. You know, I make sure that my KO swell is there, and make sure that the Vaseline I have plenty, and make sure I have adrenaline chloride 1-1000. That's the medications we use to constrict the blood vessels. And so I go through my whole bag of inventory, and come fight day, I just kind of sit back, relax, and before I go up to the arena, then I make sure I always iron my clothes, you know, and that's a system I've pretty much had forever. So nothing changes because it works.
Stitch, have you ever, like on fight night for like a fight, like a fighter, even if it was like an undercard fighter or you know, not the main event or anything, like maybe you're cornering the main event or the co-main event, but there's a fighter or a fight before where for some reason the cut man maybe got ill or got sick or just couldn't make it, and they've approached you like, Stitch, are you busy? Can you corner my fight? Can you be my cut man? Like pretty much at the 11th hour. Has that happened before?
It happened last week when I was in Miami. yeah, of course. I worked Luke Keller. He fought Andrade.
Right.
Andrade.
Right.
And so, you know, I was talking to him Wednesday at the press conference, and you know, I like chatting with people and all that. And Luke, Cool Hand Luke. I said, man, I really like your name. You know, I love the movie, but I really like your name. And so we're talking and all that, and you know, at the end, he said, man, one of these days, what I could afford you, I'd love for you to work my corner, you know? Yeah. So we left that, right?
Right.
Well, the fights were Thursday, right? So actually, it was Tuesday when we had the press conference. Wednesday, I guess his cut man couldn't make it in from Ireland. And they asked me if I would work his corner and wrap his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, you know what? Of course, I'll do it. I'd be more than glad to. So, you know, I talked to Luke, and, you know, that statement that he says that, you know, whenever I could afford you, I'd love for you to work my corner. You know, I said, well, look, man, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to work your corner, and I'm going to give you my reduced rate, brother, because it's not about the money with you.
Yeah.
It's just about giving it back to you. And so I did that. And that day of the fight, he actually came into my room at the hotel, and I went through a practice session on wrapping his hands. So it was a dress rehearsal, so to speak, right?
Right.
So when it was fight time, then you know, he had the proper wrap, and so yeah, I did that, and I do that often. So as much as I can, you know, my priorities are obviously the guys I go with, but if there's no interference, then I'll be more than glad to help people out. It's always about giving back.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Because a lot of us saw you, in his corner right there, and we're like, oh, he's got him right there. So that was cool to see. You know, it taking you out of the equation in terms of cutmen in the fight game, who do you think is essentially the most prominent or best one in the game at the moment?
As cutmen?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good cutmen out there. You know, it's tough to say one name, but I will say this, is the guys, the cutmen that work MMA fights are the ones that turn out to be good cut men, because the only way to be a good cut man, and I'm talking about just working cuts, not wrapping hands, the only way to be a good cut man is to actually work on cuts. And in MMA, of course, you know, a lot of them work cuts. And a lot of them, if you notice in MMA, they all wear gloves, they have the wrist wrap, they put the swabs there, they have the small towels that they wipe up. A lot of them will use the technique that I use, you know, especially when I was with the UFC, all these guys followed that same format. So when it comes to cut men, if I was going to recommend anybody, because a lot of times I'll get double assignments,
right?
You know, different places and all that, I'll recommend one of the guys that I work with in the mixed martial arts, because I know they're capable of handling just about any cut.
So you recommend to, you know, let's just say there's cut men listening out there that mostly dedicate their careers or their cut men careers to boxing. You would recommend that if they have the opportunity to go into the MMA world to do cuts?
Oh, of course. Of course. And, you know, there's been a lot of examples on guys in boxing. Badu Jack was a good example when, you know, he got that cut that Vladimir Klitschko got, that big vein between the eyes.
Yeah.
And the cut man, though he's worked with a lot of great fighters, that never got cut. So when he saw a big cut like that, he kind of freaked out a little bit. And, you know, that's why they brought me in after that fight to work with Badu Jack. But, yeah, you know, just because you wrap hands don't make you a cut man. Just because you know, and this is the only sport, combat sports are the only sports that, A-level sports, that where we don't have to be certified to do what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, to be a cut man or to be a trainer, all you need is a license, $50 in a license, and you're a professional cut man or a professional trainer. And, you know, that's why I always try to educate by doing videos and seminars and just, you know, teach those guys that, you got to do proper things to take care of these guys. And, you know, once a guy gets cut and they're choking, and some of the worst things I could ever see and do, or let me put it this way, some of the worst things that I see is when a cut man puts a swab in his mouth or he puts it in his ear, and then that goes into an open wound. But mm-hmm. what's even worse to that is they get that bloody swab and they put it back in their mouth. You know, that's just gross. But everybody wants to be identified, quote unquote, as a cut man,
right?
And that's not the way to do it, you know. So, and you check out the fights in the future. You know how many guys in boxing will put a swab in their ear or they'll put it in their mouth, and then you look at the guys in the MMA industry and they don't do that.
Wow, I think a lot of people after.
Educational, huh?
Yeah, I think a lot of people after that statement are definitely going to be more observant in the corners now.
Well, they should.
No, you're right. Absolutely. You mentioned that, you know, when you educate like these other cut men or other people in the business or seminars or anything like that, have you ever been approached by like commissions? Like, we just had Andy Foster, the executive officer for the California State Athletic Commission, on a sure. couple weeks ago. Have you, like, for example, have you ever been approached by, like, the California Commission to help them with, like, training cut men or kind of training, you know, manuals for them?
Of course. You know, the ABC, the Association of Boxing Commission, flew me out to New Orleans to do a seminar for all the commissioners throughout the United States and Canada. And so, you know, I did that. And I think I was in a couple tribal places that have promotions, and I've done seminars for them. Yeah, of course. And even here in Las Vegas, when Triple G fought Canelo, there was a complaint by Triple G's coach, Abe Sanchez, that Canelo was stacking his reps, which is gauze and tape and gauze and tape. And Bob Bennett, which is the head of the Athletic Commission here, called me and he asked what I thought about that. Was in their legal technique or not. And I told him it was a bunch of bull, you know, that the only reason you wrap a fighter's hands is so they don't break them. And is the rule calls that the tape has to be 1 inch away from the knuckles going backwards
right.
towards the wrist. And whatever technique these guys use in preparing their fighter during training should be allowed to be used during the fights, whether you put gauze and tape and gauze and tape. So I explained that to him. So Bob Bennett came, we met at a gym one time, and I wrapped his hands the conventional way, and I wrapped it to stacking, and he didn't feel that much of a difference. Because Abe Sanchez said it turned into a cast, which was a bunch of bull. And so the next day, Bob Bennett brought in a hand specialist, a microsurgeon, and I did the same thing, and there was no difference. But I knew that. And so in that, they ended up accepting the second Canelo Triple G fight here in Las Vegas. So, but, you know, Abe Sanchez saying, well, it turns into a cast. And, you know, my answer to him, because I was at a fight at the MGM, and I saw him across the ring, and I knew he was going to come talk to me. And I had an answer for everything. And, you know, he tried to kind of play himself off that it's not legal and this and that. That's regardless. The thing is to protect the fighter's hands. And you know, I said, you know, at this point, I know it's just psychological warfare, but you're wrong, you know. And so I put him in check on that.
So you do think it was more like a psychological edge that they were trying to get in terms of that?
Well, at that point, yeah, of course, you know, they're, you know, complaining, of course, you know, but like I told Abel, when, you know, he said, well, it turns into a cast. And I said, well, you know how many times I wrap the guy's hands and they look at me and they say, man, this feels like a cast. That's what you want to create, you know, so you don't break their hands. And, you know, so that myth, I threw it out the window with him.
Stitch, you touched on MMA Cupmen. Do you mind touching on why you don't work with the UFC anymore? And do you see yourself going back there if they invite you?
Yeah, of course, man. Ask me a question.
Do you see yourself going back? Because obviously, I think it was in 2015 when and you kind of parted ways with them, or they parted with you. Can you like speak about that? I know you've done interviews on it before, but just like kind of briefly. Yeah. And then if they invite you back, would you be willing to go back?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, I mean, I knew Dana White way before the UFC. You know, we're in the gyms. I was training fighters. He was doing pad work for executives and their wives and all that. But nonetheless, I knew Dana, and he's the one that brought me in. And at that time, it was only Leon Taves was the original cut man from UFC number one. And so we brought it in, you know, and that we kind of, Burt Watson, myself, Leon kind of developed, Don House kind of developed a program that not only the UFC uses now, but it were all over. So I was like the primary cut man, and I was working on sponsors. I had, just like fighters, you know, we all had sponsors. And as a matter of fact, I was making more money on sponsors than I was with what the UFC was paying me. But I needed the UFC to, you know, get compensated by the sponsors. So as you guys know, they went into the Reebok deal, and in the Reebok deal, all fighters had to get rid of their sponsors, and you know, made a lot of people mad and what have you not. And so they got all the cut men together and said the same thing, that you guys can't have any more sponsors. And, you know, I always try to negotiate and be the foreman, the forefront guy for all the cut men. And, you know, if I had a sponsor, let's say Tap Out, then I would I'd negotiate my fees with Tap Out, and then I would negotiate fees for the other cut men. Of course, they would get paid what they paid me, but nonetheless, you know, you got money here, money there, it came out to be okay. So they got us together and says that, you know, they can't pay us any more money. I tried to negotiate at least an increase in pay and what have you not. So anyway, John Nash from BloodyElbow.com called me out of the blue. I've never met him, still haven't seen him to this day. And he asked if I'd be interested in doing an interview on how the Reebok deal affected the Cutman. So, you know, I thought about it, and, you know, being that I grew up as a farm worker in the San Joaquin Valley of California, I mean, mm-hmm. I was born and raised in a migrant camp, and, you know, my parents were during the Cesar Chavez era when they were boycotting grapes and lettuce and all that for unfair practices of the farm workers, and I kind of drew myself back to that, and I said, you know what, this kind of same principles, if I didn't speak out for what was right, I don't think my parents would be proud of me, you know, and so I did the interview, and it was very politically correct. You know, maybe I said that maybe I could concentrate a little bit more on boxing, because obviously boxing pays a lot more. And anyway, that interview went viral. it went all over the world viral, and people are effing Dana, people are effing Reebok, and they're just, you know, UFC, and I'm getting tons of messages from all over the world. And so my wife and I are shopping at Costco, and I get a phone call from one of my friends. We're all friends. You know, I was with him for 15 years, and he asked if I could speak, and I told him to call me in an hour, and got home, and my heart is thumping, and if fact, I'm sitting in the same chair right now in my computer room, my office, that I was when I got the call.
Yeah.
So my buddy called me, two of them, and his voice was cracking, and I know he felt bad. And the only thing he said is, because of the interview you did about Reebok, the UFC is not going to use you no more.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, just kind of a little slap in the face. But I took it. And so I'm getting tons of messages. I mean, texts, and everybody's communicating with me, supporting me and all that. And the first text that I read is, found out the guy's name was Dave Estrada. Didn't know who he is, don't know who he is now. But I responded. I said, I want you to be the first one to know. The UFC just let me go for speaking out about the Reebok deal.
Mm-hmm.
Got to find a new job. Well, that shit went viral.
Yeah,
I did like
that.
57 interviews in a week. I had Hamilton come to my house. It was the biggest thing in MMA at that time. I'm getting job offers from all over the world, you know, Bellator, PFL, of course, Invicta, and Rising in Japan. And, you know, I'm getting all these calls. And so it was crazy, you know, and just continued. And still, till now, it's been, what, you said 2015?
Yeah,
people are still talking about it. People still stop me everywhere I go, and F Dana and F UFC and F Reebok, and you know, I'm proud of you doing what you did. And so, like when I did the Creed movie, I was up at the premiere in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And after the movie, we have an after fight or after movie party, and Wesley Snipes comes up to me, and the first thing he said is, "Hey man, the UFC did you wrong."
Yeah,
and I said, "Wow, you know." So I did what was right, you know, and I spoke out, and I was, I guess, the first one to really speak out about unfair practices, and kind of made me the face of the rebellion, you know. So I even had the guy from Reebok call me. It was that bad. He called me.
Oh,
he's
wow.
Up to me, and it's my wife and my son. We're having breakfast at the breakfast table, and I put the speakerphone on, and he just kissing up to me, and I understood it wasn't his fault, but
yeah.
Nonetheless, he had the, you know, the respect to call me. And. And so, you know, I mean, people are offering me, Bad Boy offered to make some shirts for me, and the proceeds would go to me. And Uriah Faber had his company that offered to make shirts, and proceeds would go to me. And, like I say, job offers from all over the world. And it was quite an insane trip for me, but best thing ever happened to me, because I'm getting a lot more work now, and I'm doing bare knuckle fights. I'm doing boxing. I'm doing MMA, I'm doing movies, and, you know, I just, One More Round. If you guys remember One More Round?
The movie?
No, well, One More Round was one of my sponsors, and Mark Zucker created that company when he was looking at Balboa, when Rocky fought his last fight,
uh-huh.
Where Rocky's telling his son, I gotta go one more round. So
he had the
epiphany that, man, that makes so much sense, because everybody in life goes one more round.
Right.
So he hired Matt Hughes, he sponsored Matt Hughes, and Matt Hughes said, nah, you know what? Get a hold of Stitch, because he's the one that gives the fighters one more round. So anyway, I'll give you some breaking news. So when I worked with KSI, the YouTuber, when he fought Logan Paul, he saw me on TV, because he was down and out and depressed, and his son talked him into watching the fight. And he saw me and just kind of rekindled his whole energy. So long story short is we're creating One More Round again. It's an apparel company, a high-end apparel company, and you'll be able to see it when Tyson Fury fights. I talked to Tyson Fury, and I said, look, you know, I work on sponsors, and I have my new company. He's a Stitch. Do whatever you want. So the Cornerman jacket that you'll see me wearing with Tyson Fury is one designed by Mark Zucker for One More Round. So you got the scoop here, brother.
That's sweet, man. That's sweet.
So it's real, real good. I'm proud of that. And, you know, I'm working with a CBD company that, you know, contacted me, and they created a cream for the healing process of cuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you get cut, you get sewn up, and there's a healing process. But it has, you know, some ingredients to include, of course, CBD. And so I asked them when they contacted me, what proof sources do you guys have? Because everybody has CBD something, right?
Right.
And so... that's the now, you know, we just created it and this and that. So the last two bare knuckle fights that I've been to, Jay Tim, the president of the company, has been with me. And when these guys get cut, then they get sewn up. We'll take a picture of them right then and there. We'll give them the cream. And then every week they send us a photo update of the healing process of the cuts. And it's been tremendous. It kind of doubles the healing process. So, you know, all those little things like that I'm working on.
Well, you're definitely busy, they definitely got you busy all over. So that's great. And then one more question before we let you go here, Stitch. Since you are, you know, you've been involved in MMA, boxing, in both sports for many, many years. You're very familiar with all these fighters, all these boxers. You're one of the most recognizable names. What do you think about, the potential partnership between Dana White and Mayweather and all that rumored, you know, partnering up that they're going to do to create their own league and kind of not use the sanctioning body belts? They want to use their own belts. What do you think about all that?
I know about as much about it as you do, you know.
Yeah.
But the whole generation of combat sports is changing, you know, the zone and everything, social media and whatever. But, you know, I got to give, you know, Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta, of course, you know, Dana comes on board. Everything that they've done everything they touched has turned into gold. So when it comes to business aspects, I guess maybe I'll see Dana somewhere, huh? Maybe I'll see him in the ring.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. You never know. So, I mean, you know, we'll see how it turns out. But Stitch, we appreciate you jumping on here on the Last Round podcast this week. You know, I'm sure we'll see you at fights. So if you ever have a moment at a fight or an event and you want to jump on in person, we always have our equipment right there recording before and after fights. But go ahead once again and plug everything you got upcoming. I remember you used to have the MMA Junkie podcast, or you were on there. What happened to that?
Yeah, well, you know, MMA Junkie, I don't know what that they – I think they lost their serious thing. They're doing something different.
Yeah.
There's a new documentary being filmed on me. We're starting this week, actually. Anderson Silva, we're going to be interviewing him. I wrote a book a while back called From the Fields to the Garden, growing up as a farm worker. And that was the fields, and the garden is Madison Square Garden, which was always my ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
So I signed up with his group out of Los Angeles, top-of-the-line people. And a week after I signed, I get a call that Triple G is fighting, of all places, Madison Square Garden. So about 3 months ago, they got a budget together. They sent a four-man team to New York, which was the finale of the documentary, to get me working with Triple G and then my time in New York. But in the boxing aspect, we're going to have Mike Tyson, Triple G, Andre Ward. We're trying to get Vladimir Klitschko. He's overseas now. In MMA, Cain Velasquez, the Diaz brothers, Anderson Silva, that we're interviewing this week, and being in Creed 2, we're trying to get Michael B. Jordan. And then, you know, we'll be finishing up the documentary in the middle of June, when I go back home to my little town, when all the fruits and vegetables are ready to be picked and all the farm workers are coming into town to pick the fruits. So that's the end of that. And then, you know, of course, I have my own line of tape, Stitch Premium products in my Chaos Well, and you know, those are available at Cutman for Higher Supplies. And so I've been doing a lot of things, man. I thought of just working cuts.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time, like I said, Stitch. And then your social media is at Stitch Duran, right?
At Stitch Duran. I mean, it's funny working with these YouTubers. I think like in a month and a half, I've got like 14,000 new followers. so I guess maybe I got to stick a little bit more on social media now.
Yeah. And these YouTube fights, regardless of what people think, they're bringing a lot of attention to the fight game. So,
and the business side, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, it does. Well, Stitch, you know, once again, we appreciate you jumping on this week, and you're welcome back anytime on our show.
All right. Appreciate it, man. Same with you guys, man. You know, if I got the time, I'd love to talk.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Stitch.
All right. My pleasure.
Take Goodbye. Care. The most prominent cut man in the business, Mike.
He certainly is. I think he's known worldwide, like he's touched on. You know, he works in everything, MMA, boxing, even the bare knuckle boxing now. So,
yeah, he's all over the place. And I remember that whole UFC debacle and the Reebok deal and stuff. And he got a lot of support after it and stuff. And then I remember talking to my buddy Carbazel at Carbazel on Twitter, Ed Carbajal, who writes for Sure Dog and some other sites, and he has his own podcast, Coast to Coast Combat Hour. Shout out to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. He's a huge MMA fan. He knows a lot about the sport. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and I remember he was talking to me about that when they let Stitch go, and then he was like, yeah, that's not right. Like, you know, he's like, it's taking away a lot of money from the fighters and the corner team, because they were able to put sponsors on themselves, and now they can't because they all have to use Reebok. And I don't know. I mean, maybe you might know, but I don't think they get a cut of that.
They get so much depending on how many fights they've had with the UFC. The more fights they had, the more they get from Reebok. But compared to what they used to get in sponsorship before, and you know, now they kind of all walk down very generic, whereas before they could have a little bit of attitude in what they wore.
Yeah.
So yeah. I prefer the old school ways, you know, when we used to watch it with Chuck Liddell and Tito.
Yeah, it's totally different. But, you know, big thanks to Stitch Duran for jumping on this week. And he's definitely busy, man. I thought it was a cool story, too, how he said he helped Cool Hand Luke last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever, last week at in Super Bowl weekend against Andrade. Luke Keeler, how Luke Keeler came up to him like just before the fight or a couple of days and said, hey, man, when I can afford you, I'm going to get you. And he's like, oh, okay. And then, like, you know, his cut man couldn't come in. And then, you know, Stitch went up to him. He said, you know what, man, I'm going to help you out. That's a pretty cool story, man. That's pretty – because, I mean, you know, obviously he's the best in the game, so he's going to cost more. I mean, it's the nature of anything. That's how it is.
Mates rates.
But going on to fight reviews from this past weekend, the 8th of February from the Sheffield Arena in your motherland, Mike. Once again, and we got to do a show over there one day. Live show.
I'm all down for it. Are you paying?
What? We're going to talk about that off air, Mike. Not on air. I'm not going to throw the business out there. On DAZN, Kell Brook returns and gets a 7th round KO over Mark DeLuca for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Welterweight title. So this is 154 pounds. Even though Kell Brook had said he could make 147, which I don't think he can. But, you know, he's a big guy. I've always liked Kell Brook. He's like, even when he won the title from Sean Porter, even though he fought a lot overseas and defending his title against, you know, lesser names until he maybe got to Spence, I've always thought he was good. But like, obviously, when Eddie Hearn got him the title, he wanted to have him make some money over there and, you know, sustain that title reign for a little bit. I mean, we know business. But I think when he went up to fight Triple G, I think we touched on this last week. When he went up to fight Triple G and he got that, you know, that injury, and then he fought Spence, and then it happened again, but on the other eye. I mean, he's one of those fighters, like, he obviously still can fight, but, I mean, is the talent still there from what it was?
I think the problem was with, you know, that he fought Mark DeLuca, who was, you know, in all honesty, he was levels below Kell Brook. So it was kind of hard to tell whether Kell Brook still has it. I don't think we'll really know that until he faces another top-class opponent. I think I agree with you. I think he's definitely got a stick at 154. I can't see him going back down to 147. He always comes in. He looks in good shape. Kind of did what he had to do. Got Mark DeLuca out of there. You could tell early on it was just a matter of time before he got him out of the ring. Next up, I think it looks like it's going to be Liam Smith, who they sparred. Back in the day when Kell Brook was fighting Triple G, Liam Smith was fighting Canelo. So they actually...
Oh, that's true.
They met up and they sparred there. In a recent interview, Matthew Backlund was kind of laughing and joking about, you know, he's like, hey, he's like, they were good spars. He's like, I was ringside.
Yeah.
So it looks like, you know, that could be a match for the future. And after that, I think they were looking at fighting, I'm trying to think, they were looking at either Patrick Teixeira was one of the champions they were looking at trying to get, and who was the other one? Rene Alvarado?
Alvarado?
No, I'm thinking of Martin J. Ward. Trying to think. I think it was Patrick Teixeira they're looking at.
Yeah, well, he just won the title at 154. The WBO strap from Top Rank's, it was a Golden Boy Top Rank matchup, and Teixeira won.
How was that it? Who was it in the matchup?
I forgot who he beat. Or was it for the vacant strap? I forgot.
Munguia stepped up and Teixeira fought the guy that trains with Garcia. Sorry, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank here on the last round. But like I said, I like Kell Brook. You know, especially when he came over here. I became a fan of his when he came over here and he beat Sean Porter. He came to LA, I mean, and took the belt. He was a challenger. And he fought well. I mean, it was a close fight. I mean, and pretty much any fight with Sean Porter is a close fight. Like you can't fight him any other way. You have to at least beat him just enough. And Kell Brook came over here and he fought really, like, he fought his heart out. And then when he won, like, that celebration, he's like, oh my God. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I think that he's looking for that one last big payday, like an Amir Khan or, you know, something, maybe even a Spence rematch or something. I think he wants Amir Khan in England.
I think as long as he doesn't sit and wait for him, because he wasted so much of his career the last 14 months or so waiting for that Amir Khan fight. And same as Amir Khan wasted a lot of time waiting for the Manny Pacquiao and the Floyd Mayweather fight. You know, if it comes along and you get a big payday, fair enough. But, you know, both of them have wasted, you know, a year to 2 years of their career just sitting back waiting for one another and waiting for these big fights to materialize.
Let me ask you this. Because obviously there was news back months ago or whatever that Crawford needed an opponent and the Top Rank was trying to get Kell Brook, but Kell Brook's price was too high. I mean, Kell Brook is still honestly a possibility for Terrence Crawford, because Terrence Crawford, all the PPC welterweights aren't going to fight him. We know that, like, unless they just throw big money at them. Is it still a possibility that Kell Brook, Terrence Crawford could be a matchup in the future? And if so, two-part question here, Mike. Who's the A side?
I would say Crawford has to be the A side
because he
now.
Has a title.
Because he has the A side, you know, the fight would probably be in the US. If it was back in England,
Kell Brook,
maybe. But then obviously he's been out of the ring. You know, that was his first fight in 14 months. Crawford's been a lot more active. The only problem is me and you both agreed, I think he looks better at 154. So does his coach. You know, Kell Brook thinks he can still make 147. He may do just for a big payday. If he gets a good payday against Crawford and he sails off into the retirement.
You think he would take it if Crawford and Top Rank kind of met his price range and said, hey, 147 WBO world title shot against Crawford? What do you think? You taking it?
If the money was right, I'm sure anybody would take the fights. But I think, you know, Kell Brook touched on he would like to be a two-weight world champion. So trying to gain one against, you know, 154 against Patrick Teixeira, who was probably the weakest of the champions at that weight?
Possibly. I mean,
buy a title.
Who else is at 154 on DAZN, Matchroom, Golden Boy, Teixeira, Kell Brook? Munguia just moved up, so he's not 154. I don't know. I forgot. But
Jallo, Lara, Hurd.
Yeah, but they're not DAZN.
Castano.
They're not.
Jesse Vargas, kind of.
You know what? If Jesse Vargas was not scheduled to fight Mikey Garcia, I could see a Vargas Kell Brook fight at 154.
Jason Rosario is the other one.
That's true.
Just won.
But I could see a Jesse Vargas Kell Brook fight at 154 if he wasn't scheduled to fight Mikey in a couple weeks.
Carlos Adames is the fight we were talking about.
That's what it was. But you know, we'll see how that turns out. And then also, there was also another fight on that card. Kid Galahad gets the technical decision against Claudio Marrero. Also on that card. What did you think about his performance?
I thought he was good. He managed to get him out of there. Kid Galahad touched it. He thought that was actually the best performance of his career. I thought he looked good. I thought Marrero was kind of limited. You could see early on that Galahad was going to be too much for him. Still, at times, Galahad is a little bit dirty, kind of crafty. Also goes the rounds. I think sometimes he just lacks that little bit of pop to get, you know, the fans kind of like onto the feet and cheering for him. You know, he's looking to try and – that was an IBF mandatory, so he's trying to work his way back into a rematch with Josh Warrington in the future.
Damn. We'll see how that turns out. And also this past Saturday, right, from – was it Maryland?
Allentown, Pennsylvania.
That's Gary Russell Jr.'s area over there, Pennsylvania, Maryland. It's where he's always at, right? When's the last time he's fought outside of that area?
Well, he only fights once a year, so he may as well do it in his hometown or close to his hometown, I guess.
So this is from the PPL Center in Allentown, Pennsylvania, like you mentioned, on Showtime. So Showtime's still hanging in there, still getting some fights, some world title fights. Gay Russell Jr. gets the 12-round unanimous decision win against King Tug. I'm not even going to pronounce his name. I think you tried it last week, and you still butchered it, and you're better at it than I am.
Nyamba.
Don't even try. By scores of 118, 110, 116, 112, and 117, 111, Gary Russell Jr. retains his WBC featherweight title. He said that he wants Leo Santa Cruz, even though he fights at 126, and Santa Cruz just moved up to 130.
I thought it was interesting that he also touched on that if he couldn't get Santa Cruz, he was willing to move up two weights.
To the 135?
Yeah, to fight either Gervonta Davis, and he would also like the rematch with Lomachenko.
You never know. You never know. I mean,
to be fair, though, I do you think it's dawning on him that fighting once a year, getting to the end of his career, he needs to make as much money as he can, quickly as he can?
I think so. I think maybe the criticism just getting to him.
And then also, you know, he kind of relies on his speed, and that's going to be the first thing to go as he gets into older age. So
yeah, and you know, the funny thing is like, I don't think there's too many fans in boxing, but especially hardcore fans, who dispute that he's not talented. Because he is talented.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously is. Like he's one of the fastest guys in boxing, even though he fights only once a year, which is kind of ironic to say. But he's talented. He's talented. Like, I think I saw somebody tweet within just before the fight or after the fight, saying like, if he fought multiple times a year, and especially fought against like tough, you know, competitive competition or whatever, competitive talent, and beat them, you know, how he usually beats these other guys, I mean, he could have a spot on the pound-for-pound list.
No, he definitely is talented. I think that's why a lot of us are kind of, you know, actually disappointed that he doesn't fight more than once a year, because you look at some of the matchup in and around his weight division that we could have, and, you know, the kind of like mouth-drooling matchups, you know, like the Leo Santa Cruz, the Gervonta Davis, the Lomachenko rematch, they're all fights I would love to see.
Right. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, it'd be breaking news if Gary Russell Jr. fights again the rest of the year. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it turns out. But what a way to end the year for Gary Russell Jr.
in February.
And then fight previews this upcoming Friday, the 14th of February, from the Honda Center, formerly the Arrowhead Pond, a throwback in Anaheim, California, on DAZN. Valentine's Day over here in the States. Your favorite fighter and mine, Ryan King Flash Garcia. I combine both nicknames because they call him the Flash, and then they call him
King Rye.
King Rye. Like he gave himself the name King. He gave himself the name King, which is
self-anointed.
Yeah. So he goes up against Francisco Fonseca for the WBC Silver Lightweight title. Real quickly, what do you think?
Handpicked opponent for Ryan. You know, Fonseca's, if people recognize the name, he has a loss to Gervonta Davis back in 2017 and most recently lost to Tevin Farmer in 2018. So, you know, he's been in there with some notable opponents, come up short every time. Should be interesting to see if King Ryan, now he's been with the Reynosos for a couple of camps, if we can see, obviously, you know, improvement in his kind of rigid style, if he's going to start, you know, protecting that chin a little bit more, whether it's still up in the air. So...
No, you're right. I mean, we'll see. We'll see if he's improved or not. I mean, and then they want to match him up with Jorge Linares, reportedly, later on in the year. Linares is also on that card. He's going up against Carlos Morales, who's another Golden Boy fighter. I don't know if this is – he's probably the co-main. Linares is probably the co-main and stuff. But even though Linares hasn't really been the same since before the Lomachenko fight, I still think Linares is still too good for him. Like, unless, like, I don't know, man. Like, that Duno fight, the last fight, that's still weird, man. Like, there's still a lot of questions behind that win for me, for Ryan Garcia. Like, he posted a video of it. I saw that, like, where he knocked him down or knocked him out and stopped him. And people started, like, criticizing him. Like, hey, like, you didn't touch him. And he's like, and he started responding back. He's like, oh, look very closely. You could see it. I touched him.
Like Dave Allen's performance from the weekend. Which
yeah, exactly. That's a good analogy. So I don't know, man. Like we'll see. And the Honda Center, like we talked about, holds around 15,000. I don't know. Like it's a big arena.
Yeah, I think they've, as far as I know, I think they've still just sold the first.
The bottom bowl.
Yeah, the bottom bowl of seats.
I don't know. But they Golden Boy has to try to at least try to make him seem bigger than he is. You know, people still waiting for that answer. Is he a social media star or is he a boxing mainstream star? What, you know, that question is still to be answered.
If they do as they say, you know, he gets the win, Linares gets the win, and then Ryan Garcia, Linares later this year. If Ryan beats even an aged Linares, yeah, I will still give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Also on that card quickly, Alexis Rocha, friend of the show, goes up against Brad Solomon for the WBC Continental Americas welterweight title. Alexis Rocha is 15-0, 10 KOs. So we're biased here because he is a friend of the show, him and his brother, Ronnie Rios. So good luck to him if he wins. And if you're listening, Lex,
when he wins,
come back on. Come back on. Also this Saturday, the 15th, Caleb Plant puts up his IBF super middleweight title against Vincent Feigenbutz. How do you say
Feigenbutz?
It? Feigenbutz. That should be a pretty decent scrap. See how that goes. And then real quickly to wrap up, news and notes. This is an interesting one. Eddie Hearn posted a DM request, right, saying that Adrian Broner saying he wanted $20 million to fight Devin Haney at 135. What the hell is that about?
I was interested in one of the IFL TV interviews where he's in a car going to the fight with Coogan Cassius. He kind of touches on it, saying that, you know, Adrian Broner and Devin Haney were kind of going back and forth. He looked at his DMs. Adrian Broner had sent him one saying, you know, okay, I'll make 135. You give me $20 million, I'll knock out Devin Haney.
That's crazy.
Eddie Hearn said he thought to himself, you know what? Remember when Broner posted that message from Eddie Hearn offering him the contract with DAZN? He remembered back to that and was like, you know what? I'm going to post this since he did that to me.
Yeah.
So he posted it out there. And then supposedly Devin Haney's agreed, I'll do it at 143.
Damn.
So Eddie Hearn said he may get in touch with Adrian Broner, see if they'll do it at the catch weight of 143.
Right.
Not for $20 million, though.
You never know, man. That DAZN money affecting the market. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. We'd like to thank our guest for this week, Stitch Duran, the best and most recognized cut man in the fight game. We appreciate him coming on. Mike, tell them when they follow us on social media.
At The Last Round 12 on Twitter, at The Last Round 12 on Instagram. And hopefully, if you keep an eye out over the weekend, we should hopefully have some bonus episodes on Sunday and Monday if everything goes as planned.
So once again, guys, thank you. Thank you again for listening. I'm Danny Z. For my co-host, Michael, the Franchise Shepherd, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.